Merci beaucoup. Je commence par m'excuser, j'ai une petite extinction de voix. Donc j'espère qu'avec le micro, vous m'entendrez bien. Vous pouvez augmenter un petit peu le volume et le rebaisser quand on aura nos intervenantes. So I will welcome you in English because this the two conferences will be in English. Maybe I will remind you that if you are not here to listen to Jennifer Meyer and Polina Zhvanyukova, it's that you should follow the other link to be in the second atelier. But here we will have two presentations. The first one by Jennifer Meyer, who is from the Julius Maximilians Universität from Würzburg in Germany. She's a specialist in historical foreign language research, inter and transcultural language and media didactics. And her dissertation dealt with the national stereotypes in textbooks for the teaching English from 1900 to nowadays. And today she will speak about the influence of the Zeitgeist in cultural learning in foreign language teaching in Germany. So Jennifer, if it's all right with you, for now we don't see your camera.
Should be on now.
Thank
Hello.
you. And you, so you will have 20 minutes presentation and then I will tell you the questions, or since my voice is broken, maybe if the people who have questions can speak it up, that would help me. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your warm welcome and thank you for having me here. And a warm welcome to everybody from Germany in Würzburg. And I will just share my slides with you. Okay. So today I will talk to you about the influence of the Zeitgeist on the development of cultural learning and in foreign language teaching, but especially in teaching English as a second language in Germany. And as Davin and Risa already said in 2005, that research on the other is political, and also holiday crisis, the lack of political and foreign language teaching. Culture is of importance and it should be seen as political too. So there are structures of consciousness of an epoch, and there are different dimensions that have to be considered. So the first dimension is the political one, then there's the social dimension and the economic one. All of those dimensions had a huge impact on education and governmental regulations. And those governmental regulations had impact on textbook creation, and those textbooks had also an impact on teaching in Germany, and I think also in other countries. So the Zeitgeist includes more than just one mentality, because you could think of the history of mentalities and the research on mentality difficulties, but it's more than that. It goes beyond only mentalities. Today, I want to show you some exemplary contents of the curriculum in Germany, especially for higher levels. It's called the Gymnasium. And only in Bavaria, as I'm living in Bavaria, I'm studying here and doing my research here. So I choose Bavaria because we have different Länder and different curriculums, and I will also have a look at the state curriculum and the European ones, the Common European Framework. I will leave out the GDR because that would go too wide. So okay, for the Zeitgeist, I have found a definition I find quite useful in this context. It's from Krause, and he said that the Zeitgeist is a hypothesis for pattern in meaningful practices that is specific to a particular historical time period, and it links different realms of social life and social groups, and it extends across geographical contexts. So the Zeitgeist is a label for a contemporary moment, a periodic specific cultural moment, and it describes phenomena. And I will use it too as a tool for language learning analysis. Originally, the term Zeitgeist comes from Herder. He used it in 1796 and called it the spirit of the times, Geist der Zeiten. He says that the cultural, social, and political dimensions are intertwined. And it's like a cultural sociology, which includes also analysis of cultural patterns and change of cultural concept. So for Herder, culture was something homogeneous. It was like I like to use the example of eggs. So if you think of boiled eggs, that would be homogeneous. It will have a closed environment that can touch the other cultures, but is closed in itself. Then you have the multicultural point of view, which leads to us to intercultural learning, which I will go on later. Those would be fried eggs with the yellow in the middle, which can mingle with the white and other cultural contexts. And then for transcultural learning or global issues nowadays, you could use the metaphor of scrambled eggs because it's mingled completely. So those cultural concepts really put easily by myself with my egg example, they have changed over time, and so has the zeitgeist. For the curricula, I have used this definition by myself, and I say that curricula are an expression of the educational intentions of history and society and are reflected in objectives, contents, linguistic design, and references to the educational and to the teaching objectives. So they form the basic framework for teaching. They have changed the course over time and adapted to the zeitgeist. Or you could also say that the zeitgeist has formed the curricula. They are official concepts of education. And according to Apel in 1991 already, they should contain answers to the challenges of the time. So curricula go beyond their social ideas. They are expressions of political changes, of crisis and problems of all kinds. So if there is a political change or crisis or a social idea that is changing, you will have new curriculums. And Apel calls the curriculum therefore a stretchable corset out of which school and teaching can and must be shaped. And as time change, so do the demands on what should be taught and more importantly, how it should be taught. So curricula contain statements about all knowledge and skills, about all attitudes that the assigned education system at one time has to impart to the students. So therefore, curricula are the results of a confrontation. I'm sorry. Where am I? Here am I. So where was I? Yeah. The curricula are the results of a confrontation between social powers, and they are based on decisions about the aims and contents of teaching and to which the educational ideal of a time, here the zeitgeist, mediated by the interests of an influential social group has been incorporated. So the state, well, in Germany, is the bearer, the designer, the user, and at the same time, the regulating factor for everything that will be done later on in the schools. Flipper said in 2018, that textbook writers nowadays write or do the material development according to the curricula. And also teachers teach according to the curricula, and mostly they use the textbooks. And she said that those, the textbook writers and the teachers, and of course those who do the curricula, to make assumptions what is useful for the students. And these assumptions are based on their knowledge. And this knowledge is based on the current thinking of their time. And thus, the current thinking of the time is what I call the zeitgeist. So I have divided the times, well, from 45 until now into decades, because almost each decade there was a new curriculum. Apart from 1945, of course, after the collapse of the Third Reich, there was no new curriculum, but there was a reconciliation. There was a need to change the school system due to the horrors of the Second World War. So its main objective there was the democratization, reconciliation. And to do that, they used textbooks and teachers from the Republic of Weimar because they couldn't possibly use the materials from the Third Reich. So I won't go any further into that epoch, but I will jump into the 50s, where the first state curricula appeared. In 1952, the first state curricula was designed, and in the 50s, there was an economic boom. The first guest workers arrived in Germany, and there was more traveling and more money, and therefore there was a need for more foreign language teaching. So parents wanted their children to learn foreign languages for work and for traveling. But until 1964, mostly in the higher levels, there was language teaching and not so much in the other school forms in Germany. In 1964, that changed with the Treaty of Hamburg, which I will get into in the 60s. And in 1952, in the state curricula, there were three main objectives. The first one were the four skills: listening, reading, writing, and speaking, and The second objective was to increase spiritual and mental powers through use and understanding of the language forms. So through grammar and vocab, they thought that the spiritual mental powers were to be increased. And finally, what is particularly important in this context is the third objective, which is an understanding of foreign culture and intellectual life, which is based on deepened linguistic skills. So they thought in the 50s that with an understanding of language skills, of linguistic skills, you would have an understanding of the cultural order. So the textbooks were, you have an example of the textbooks here. It's the Listening English from the publishing company Klett, which is still in use in Germany today. Klett is really famous here, not this book, of course, but Klett. And the contents were only based on America, on the US, and on Great Britain. So it was only background knowledge. Only what is Britain, what it's all about, how it's the constitution, and so on. So the students only learned background novel and to talk about the background knowledge according to their linguistic skills. So the cultural concept here is a homogeneous one. They were obtaining facts and figures and understanding of the others through text and linguistic patterns. What I find really important also in the 50s is that there was already a call for European solidarity and integration. With 1949, when the Europe of Council was founded, and also the Cultural Convention, the European Cultural Convention 1954. So there was also an opening towards a European Union. So in the 60s, you can see the citations from the curriculum above in German and the translation underneath. There was the reform, the Treaty of Hamburg, where now, due to the Council of Europe, because its purpose was to promote each other's languages, and all citizens should have the opportunity to learn other languages. Methodologies were based on real communication tasks. So in the 60s, we have the other lingual method, which was derived from the behaviorism. And here in the curriculum, it says diversity meets the needs of society. So its objectives were the confrontation with the economic, political, and cultural problems beyond Germany. So not only Germany was in focus, but also every other country in Europe, especially in Europe and the US. The guiding principle here was diversity. The students should do more in-depth learning and not learn so many superficial things as it was in the 50s when they talked about the constitution of Britain and so on. It shouldn't be superficial, but really in the need of the diversity of Europe. Schubel said in 1966 that the student should capture as much of the English spirit as possible. And the English spirit is shown in textbooks and in text, also in literary texts. I have brought a textbook only the contents of a textbook. That's The Mind and Soul of Britain and the US. And here you can see the table of contents. And as you can see, it really isn't that different from the 50s, but you have what the curriculum wanted. So you have the land and the people, the steering the deeps, the church, English thought. So you also have a bit of philosophy in here, the democratic spirit and so on. Still, it's really factual. It's really a lot of background knowledge that was done in the 60s still here for the US. In the 70s, there was the communicative turn. There was a huge influence of language teaching research, and the communicative patterns were introduced into language learning. It says here in the curriculum that the study of the cultural achievements, society, economy, and politics of the English and French speaking areas, respectively, with particular emphasis on contemporary issues, should be part of as English or, well, foreign language teaching. At a new higher level, it was asked that they study according to their interests, so they could choose between a higher level of learning foreign languages or a ground level of learning languages. And the textbook that you can see here is for the higher levels, and it's called It's called People, Human Dimensions in Britain and America. So in cultural learning, there was something called Landeskunde, which was introduced already in the 60s, but more importantly in the 70s, it's called area studies. But the learning objective goals are more important than the cultural ones. So Landeskunde, area studies, was used to foster communication. And there was something called a tourist approach. So they learned cultural contents in order to be able, for example, to book a reservation by telephone to England. So if they wanted to go to London, they could book a hotel, or they could go to a restaurant or ask where the next supermarket is. And that was that. So they get along in the target culture. So the focus is on language teaching and not really on subject teaching, which means teaching the topic. So, and Landeskunde is still subordinated to language teaching and communication. So we have in the 70s a transition from formalism to face-to-face communication, and the social components become more and more important, which you can see here in the textbook. So here in this textbook, the topics were mass media, position of men and women, modern industrial civilization, economic and energy policy, future management, and social issues. For the curriculum, there were no further changes until 1982 or 1984. There were little changes, but not really for the cultural contents. In 75, as we already heard this morning, there was the threshold level from the Council of Europe, which of course also took a huge impact on learning foreign languages. In the 80s, there were no new priorities concerning language goals, but the cultural contents were further explained. So here, for example, in this context, it says there's an ability to deal with important living conditions in English-speaking countries in order to come to a better understanding of the way of life and problems in these countries. So they wanted the students to be able to deal with important living conditions in English-speaking countries. So like in the 70s, the social issues, and they wanted them to come to a better understanding of the ways of life and problems in these countries. So the reform of the curricula was based on the contents, and those contents should be based on social and scientific developments and no longer learning about facts and figures, but the learning objectives were important. Also in 1982, there were the theses of Stuttgart, which led ultimately to intercultural communicative competence in Germany, because Landeskunde was marked from the beginning. It was really criticized because it said it's not enough to have background knowledge about the culture, the target culture, but they have to have a deeper understanding of the identity, their own identity, and the identity of the target culture. So that was enabled also in the 80s. Still, it was mostly US and Great Britain, but also other nations could be part of class if there's a current issue. So for example, the troubles in Ireland, which were also a huge topic in the 90s. They wanted the students also to be willing to engage with the lifestyles and cultures of the English-speaking countries and to respect them in a spirit of international understanding. So the theme of international understanding was really important for Landeskunde area studies in Germany. They wanted a Europe to widen and to get more important. And in the 80s, each subject in Germany, so math, German, English, French, and so on, had their own curricula that changed in the 90s when it got intertwined. And I have also brought the contents of this textbook to show you. And it's almost the same as it was in the 70s. And you do not have any national topic, but not Great Britain and its constitution, Great Britain and its geography, but now you have the family, which could also be a topic only concerning Germany or other European countries. And you have the roles of men and women and alternative ways of living. Then you have difficulties in coping with life. You have the topic of man, media, reality, status, and affluence, and so on. So it doesn't really divide the nations. It gets into the topics that concern all nations and, well, everybody. So I find it really, really interesting because it will change in the 90s again with intercultural communicative competence. They will go back to a nation topic themed um, understanding of culture. So it's more like, what is Britishness and what is Germanness and how, what's it have to do with the Dutch? What is your identity? And that was not the case in the 70s and 80s. And I find it really interesting. So in the 90s, and I have already said a lot about that, for the first time, English is mentioned as the lingua franca. And here it says, in 1990, at that teaching, foreign language should have an insight into diversity and significance of the English-speaking world, should make pupils understand that language and culture are also intertwined, and that understanding also requires knowledge of the country and cultural understanding. So you still have Landeskunde, you can see it here, Landeskundliches Wissen, so that's the knowledge of the country, background studies or area studies. And you need cultural understanding. So it's already leading into intercultural communicative competence. It talks about diversity, significance of the English-speaking world. So it's not only the US and Great Britain. It's also about, well, mostly the Commonwealth of Nations. And yeah, it's mostly that. In the next example, you will see that India is part of the textbook. But still, it's the whole world. It still emanates from the US and Great Britain, but it should appreciate cultural performances and also take into account problematic developments in lower classes in society, in not only Great Britain, US, but all over the world, if possible. The educational goals were also the soft skills. That's new. So the interpersonal skills should be developed at a school in Germany now. So it's not only the state, just the society and so on, but also the individual and its identity. In the higher levels, they wanted the students to have sufficient knowledge of the target culture, which should lead to a growing understanding of complex contexts that enable a more in-depth and independent study of literature and an examination of more comprehensive and multi-layered original studies. So we still have Landeskunde with a wider understanding. So we are going towards an intercultural understanding. Because also there's happening a lot in the 90s concerning Europe. So you have in 1994, the European Center for Modern Languages that's been founded. Then you have the Treaty of Schengen with the abolition of border controls in 1995. So there's a lot going on. And also the Common European Framework for Reference was launched in 1991. It will take 10 years to be published, but still there's a lot of change in Europe. And you can see that too in the curriculums and you can see it in the textbooks. So I'll show you the example of the textbook, the contents in 1992. So when you think of the 70s and 80s, where those issues were most important, they are going back now to nation topics, like from empire to Europe. We have India here. We have modern Britain, where it's Britain in decline. What about rural England? And you have also the topic of Britain and Ireland, like the Anglo-Irish heritage and what is happening there. We have a topic of art, culture, society. So it's going beyond here. We have what is American about America. We have a topic of science, technology, and the environment, religious life in the US and Britain, and also values in British and American education and struggle for democracy. So it's really, really varied what's happening now. And if you have been following, it really, really changed a lot according to Europe being opened up and the changes in society and politics, of course. So in the 2000 until 2015, Germany did really, really badly in PISA, really badly. So they thought, what have we done wrong? And they said, okay, it's because we have an input orientation of, we look a lot into contents and into factual learning, but it should be more output. So the students should have competencies. That's what we do today. We have a competence orientation. And now the students should no longer get a lot of input, but they should also have output. So here it says in 2004, the learning foreign languages means immersing oneself in foreign world and understanding them to an increasing degree. They enable learners to acquire knowledge about foreign ways of thinking and acting and to compare them with their own. Pupils can understand historical conditions, develop understanding and respect for the foreign and avoid misunderstandings. So they should be able to do something, not only to memorize things. The focus is a lifelong learning now, and the personality is really in focus, and the individual identity. And also they want to foster cultural identity. So now we really have intercultural communicative competence and focus. And it's not only the UK and the US, but the whole world. And other aspects of context that are mentioned are society, political life, economy, environment, nature, science, technology, values, and all those can be found in texts. Of course, the educational objectives of the 90s are still essential, like personality development and comprehensive general education. And this led into today with our competence orientation. And it's the last example I wanted to show you. A book from, oh, I haven't put it there. It's from 2005. So as you can see, it's about society. I wonder who we are. And the first chapter is really about Britishness and Germanness and what it means. It's really intercultural. So you have to change of perspective for everything in the first one. Then there's the political life, looking back into the future. So you have here, of course, you have facts, the political system. It's according to Byron, and it's his model of intercultural learning. So you have the skills to have knowledge, that's knowledge from Byron. And you have Western universalism, you have a lot of literary texts. And then you have the economy, what's important with the economy. And it's not only the US and Great Britain, you can see, but it's mostly all around the world, and also Ireland and India and so on. Then there's a chapter on technology, norms and values, living ideas. Oh, here's there's the one with Britishness. What does it mean to you? And social disease, the cause, Englishness. There it is, not the first chapter. And the last two ones I haven't put. The last one is Shakespeare. It's a whole chapter on Shakespeare. And before that, it's culture, high and low. What is culture? What does it mean? And here it's about implementing culture and getting them to get their own identity. So all in all, as a summary, really quickly, I will do the summary. Under the 70s, you have a cognitive knowledge approach. So it's all about receptive, imitative patterns. Then in the 70s, 80s, you have the communicative, the pragmatic approach with social issues and the threshold level of the common European framework. In the 90s, you have now the intercultural interactive approach. And today, we still have the intercultural approach, but we also talk about citizenship education, which has not yet arrived in the textbooks, but we do talk about it in research. And it's been, we add global aspects and issues. So in the new textbooks, you'll find a lot of topics concerning globalization. So thank you very much for your attention.